This is Adam Shartoff, and you're listening to FilmWax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films and AT&T. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 148 of FilmWax Radio. I welcome you and to this very special show. This past spring, I'd heard about this movie, Bending Steel, and I made a point of seeing it, and I was not disappointed. It's a definitely one of these very inspirational stories, and if you come to the Rooftop Film screening that's coming up on Monday, July the 8th, down at Coney Island, it's a free show. They're going to have a strongman performance with a bunch of guys, and then they're going to do the screening. I think the address on the Rooftop Film's website says 3059 West 12th Street. So I guess if you're going to use GPS to get there, that's how you want to do it. And but we go into more details about the whole thing. There is live music at 7:30, and then the live performance by the Strongmen are at 8 o'clock. There it goes. And at 9 o'clock, where we'll see the film. So it should be a lot of fun. It's a great, great film. And you know, just the fact that it's a rooftop sort of backs me up a little bit. Have you been going? These guys, they knock themselves out. They do these spectacular events, but then it's been a very rainy season, very rainy. And a number of events have been postponed and delayed, and it's just got to be very frustrating, not only because of the headache, of doing that, of moving an event, and also, you know, it's disappointing. These events on a beautiful summer evenings are unlike anything else. It's what makes this series so special. It's disappointing when they can't do it, because it works so well. Anyway, but this is slated Bending Steel for Monday, and we're going to have on the director, Dave Carroll, the producer, Ryan Scafuro, and the strong man himself, Chris Scheck. And they're all lovely guys, and they came on, and we did this interview. So that's going to be the first one up. And then it's followed by filmmaker Nathan Silver, who has got a few films under his belt already, and he is a very prolific guy. I was introduced to him by our mutual friend, who is actually in Soft in the Head, one of his, Nathan's two new films, my friend Theo Belukis, who actually was a co-host earlier when Sam Need came on the show. And we're expecting Theo back in a few weeks to come back on to co-host again, and hopefully more frequently. Anyway, Theo introduced me to Nathan. I saw both Soft in the Head and then his other film, Exit Elena, and really enjoyed them. And so Nathan's going to be on, and he's actually coming on, as you'll hear later, with his mom. And we did that because his mom is in a couple of Nathan's films, but plays an especially essential role in Exit Elena. It is also that film, Exit Elena, which is coming up for its theatrical engagement at Rerun on July 12th. So these things are coming up quickly, and we want to talk about them. And so that's the show. And then I will come back on afterwards. Now, I'm only going to say this because I'm chasing down sponsorship opportunities. You know, it's no small thing. I really need them to make this thing live and thrive, and then I can continue doing quality shows for you guys. So if you have any ideas for a sponsor, write me at adam@filmwax.com, and if it should lead to a successful relationship, meaning they come on board as a sponsor, you will get a finder's fee, and we'll work that all out before I reach out to that candidate. So that's how you can participate. And also, you can just write me anyway. Just let me know what you think of the shows, if you have any suggestions for guests, etc., etc. And of course, as always, consider subscribing to FilmWax Radio on iTunes. I love that people are coming to Rooftop Films, and I do want them to do that and check out all the stuff that's going on the website and the show. But just subscribe, and then you can get it on your tablets and on your smartphones and listen to it that way as well. If you recall, last week I had on Penny Lane and Brian Fry, who are the co-filmmakers, the co-directors of Our Nixon. Well, tonight, Wednesday evening, the 3rd of July, 2013. They're having a free screening at Socrates Sculpture Park in Long Island City, Queens. And, oh, guys, come on down. See this. It's such an entertaining, fun documentary, even though Nixon is the star of it. But it's all these home movies taken in around the White House and all taken by Nixon's cronies, you know, like the Haldeman and Ehrlichmans of the world. So you need to see the film, and you can do so for nary a dime. It won't cost you anything. Just come on down to Socrates Sculpture Park in Long Island City, which is like a heartbeat away from Manhattan and from Greenpoint. And then on Saturday, July 6th, Belleville Baby will be at the Old American Can Factory. That's Saturday the 6th. On next Monday, they've got the Bending Steel, as I mentioned, and much, much more ahead. And they've got another at least good 6 weeks left of rooftop film. So thank you, and we'll be back, of course, at the end of the show with the postmortem. But I'm saying that this is germane, not what the actual spoiler is, because that part we will cut out. But I like the idea that of talking about the spoiler.
Sure.
That there is a spoiler, and that how other people screw up.
Yeah, right.
After doing 100 interviews, or however many, 100, 300, 400, you do hopefully by then realize, you think a little bit more about these things. So you don't want to talk about the particular issue in your film where there's a buildup. It's a spoiler in that regard.
We put a lot of effort into, you know, doing a lot of very subtle work in the film, so build up and mood, and and then to have someone just blast it away and say what's going on right off the gate is tough.
But between the fact that people have been to festivals and now they their social media, blogging, you know, what have you, it's I can't imagine how difficult it is keeping something like the cat in the bag.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I try to just immediately tell people, you know, hey, let's not talk about this. And other than that, everything's open season. Just don't ruin the film for an audience.
Right. It's must be incredibly hard to do that.
It's a new concept.
But yeah, you'd think, you know, with the Game of Thrones and Mad Men and all, you know, all of these shows, that people are becoming a little more aware that they're not supposed to spoil things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they still do.
They still do. And so it's what it becomes is the onus becomes on the reader or the listener to avoid.
Yeah, you got to like shut things off.
Yeah.
I wasn't on Facebook like right after the, you know, the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones.
I still haven't seen it yet.
Me either.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're not going to talk
about
it. What
happens? Oh, shoot. wait, of course not. Okay. So let me just interrupt for a second because I want to introduce you all. We are talking about a great documentary today, but we're joined today by Ryan Scarfuro, who is the producer, or a producer, or the what is
the producer, the producer and cinematographer.
Yeah. And DP. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we also have Dave Carroll, who's the director of it. And we
yes,
are,
sir.
And pleasantly, we are also joined by Chris Scheck, who is this the subject of the film. And welcome, guys. To
Thank
Film
you.
Wax Radio.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming all the way out of your way. You all had a schlep, I bet, right?
Yeah, Brooklyn. This is like another planet out here.
Yeah, it is.
People actually live out here? I don't know.
So Ryan and Dave and Chris, thank you for coming out to Planet Brooklyn. And your movie, Bending Steel, is one of the highlights of the Tribeca Film Festival. Of course, was your New York premiere. But was that your U.S. premiere?
It was our world premiere.
It was our world premiere.
Yeah,
that was really the first official screening the public.
Okay. So what you're saying is you didn't premiere on another planet.
No.
Because it was
not on another planet. I mean, we would have liked to. It would have been a universal premiere, maybe on Mars. But that option just wasn't open. We had a very small budget, and that just wasn't going to happen.
That's Dave.
Hello.
The director.
Radio World.
I'd like to give people the opportunity to get used to being able to identify the voices. And Chris, welcome also.
Thank you.
Yeah. Chris, you were terrific. Were you taken aback when you got the script, the screenplay, and you saw how many lines you had?
No, there was nothing scripted. It was really, it's all reality. It's all...
Interesting concept.
It was sort of it covered my training experience for 2.5 years and my personal growth during 2.5 years and the people that I associated with, people that are during part of this little group. And they did a very effective job of that.
Yeah.
Nothing scripted about it.
I think he was joking, but...
I know, but I really sometimes never know. I'm sorry.
As reality shows go,
I'm sorry for entertainment.
Scripted.
I apologize because I practice a lot of irony and humor during this podcast. For all intents and purposes, it is a verite style, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a verite film, and it's not exactly fly on the wall filmmaking. I mean, we kind of processed what was going on with Chris, and we had to very carefully figure out, you know, what we wanted to see and separate the good from the bad. And you know, there's a lot of, you know, as you know, when you make a film, even a documentary, there's a lot of process going on and craft behind it. And I think the way we tell the film, the story through the film, it is kind of does play off very much like a fictional film, and we wanted that kind of, you know, that roller coaster ride as someone's watching it and kind of be engulfed in a story, and just like you would in any other film.
Right, and it makes it all the more essential that you don't give away that thing, which in of itself is the aforementioned spoiler, because it you're right, the story works like a work of fiction too. Or, you know, where life is never so quite so, gives you quite such an arc and a resolution, I suppose, or at least a walk away type of, you know.
There's a very specific climax in the film.
Yeah.
You know, similar to many great narratives that it's, you know, one moment and that we aren't going to discuss much more than that.
But do see, it's called Bending Steel. You guys are going to be at Rooftop Films.
Yeah, it's July 8th.
Thank you.
July 8th. Pretty awesome on Coney Island, which is going to be, I mean, on the beach, you know, outdoors. That's going to be a beautiful night out there.
Yeah. Chris, you're excited because...
I'm very excited.
This ties in another whole network of people.
An event. Hopefully a very large audience. And we'll not only have people that are there because they want to see the film, but we'll pick up the crowds that are there on normal busy Monday evenings. And Coney Island is probably pretty busy during the summer on Mondays, I think.
But it's the strongman, right? Is it a contest or is it a strongman? No, it's a strongman
performance.
It's not a contest. It's not a competition of any sort. It's a performance.
Yes. What I do is I perform. It's not a competition or a contest.
Right. What they do is, you know, it's very much like old vaudevillian style performing. Whereas, you know, the bigger, burlier, kind of barrel-chested guys that are considered strongmen, like, or the modern strongman, is more of a contest and a competition because you can actually structure it and things, you know,
standardization
can
of the way.
Standardize
yeah.
it, right?
Sure, you all have your own performance. I'm trying not to say act, but even though I think act is a fine word for it.
I think act is appropriate.
Okay, yeah, okay. I didn't want to minimize.
I mean,
act meaning event. Yeah,
they call what they do feats of strength, not tricks. Not
oh gosh, no,
you know,
yeah,
because that kind of implies there's working or something going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, Ryan, describe the synopsis though, since we should have probably started off that way.
Sure. Yeah, the story, you know, follows Chris as he's. As he's training to become an old-time strongman, but he's taking these feats of strength that he's performing in his basement, which is when we kind of discover him, and he's attempting to bring them public. He wants to perform publicly for the first time. In order to do that, he has to kind of confront a bunch of insecurities that he's had his whole life and things that have held him back, which are a fear of failure in front of crowds, kind of social awkwardness, the lack of support within, you know, his life essentially, and we follow him and through, you know, this process he meets people within the community, he finds kind of a place where he feels like he belongs, and he finds the support and the the confidence to confront these things for the first time in his life.
It's beautiful. Yeah, it's a very moving story. And, of course, exciting and a lot of humor in it as well. Chris, you're obviously a complicated guy in the sense in terms of the way I'm thinking about it, in the sense that you seem a bit shy for attention on one hand, yet on the other side of it, you're a performer, and now you're also the subject of a major documentary. So
that's something I've often thought about it, and I can't really reconcile it. I hope to become a good performer, but I'll always be a little bit shy.
Yeah,
you know, it's nice being sort of a little recognized in the community, but I always want to have a little bit of anonymity. I guess I am shy. I guess it materialized into something which was a little bit beyond our expectations, and things happened very rapidly, and we had a lot of good fortune, and something like this takes a little while to digest.
Chris, someone we know ran into you on the train who you don't know, who saw the film recently.
Oh, yes.
You want to tell that story? Because I thought it was pretty funny.
I was reading a newspaper on the R train, and a gentleman came up to me.
Which newspaper? I'm just kidding.
I don't know. The Wall Street Journal or something.
Good answer.
Good answer.
He's very well read.
And the person introduced himself. And I said, yes, I'm so-and-so. I'm Krzysztof. You know, who might you be? Yeah. I don't even remember his name. He said, well, you're in Bending Steel. And he mentioned that he saw it or that he was part of the production. And so that was interesting. It's nice when those things happen once in a while. But you have to keep your feet on the ground, too, you know?
But also it's been positive feedback. Could have been a bad movie, and it could have been negative feedback. Or you might have been someone very unlikable. Like there might be other guys that people confront or know or recognize, but you know, they either don't want
to. Unapproachable or
wouldn't want to.
Or just not great people.
Right, yeah. My experience was you really get a sense of who Krzysztof is. Better put, that you get a deep sense of empathy watching your story.
I've lived in New York for all my life, but I don't feel like I belong here. There has always been a part of me that has felt extraterrestrial.
The way he handles himself, he's a very personal person. He is himself, and he doesn't share it too much.
I don't have a whole lot of relationships with other people. Minimal. This is perhaps the largest struggle of my life. Right now, there's a hook in me, and I don't know if it's real or if it's psychological, that is not giving me enough leeway to get out there, and I can't chop through the chain to get away from it.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Chris Shek. I'm a strong man. I want to assure you that what I'm doing is not magic.
One thing, for instance, is your relationship with your parents. Regardless of how great or not so great your relationship with your parents are, I mean, anybody could relate to that. You never stop wanting recognition, approval. And it's
that's
a major,
natural.
Yeah. And it's a major part of the film is your parents'.
Yeah, they
engagement with, you know, you and what you're going through at the time.
I think that I've recognized that, at least in this arena, I probably won't have their approval. They're old school, and I'm sure they would have liked, they want to see me successful, but they would have preferred success would have occurred in or appeared in something else.
You know,
something more conventional, like
being
a plumber, electrician, a lawyer, or a doctor, or something like that. I mean, being a performer is sort of out on a tangent someplace. But ultimately, if I achieve success, I'm sure they'll be happy for me, even if they don't acknowledge it.
I think one of the interesting things, you know, in the film is the scene where, you know, Chris goes home and kind of, you know, tells his family, like, this is what I want to do. And it's very much like, hey, mom and dad, I'm like running away with the circus kind of moment. You know, it's comical, and at the same time, there's like this kind of very bitter sting that kind of goes along with it.
Sure.
And, you know, it's an interesting dynamic in the film for sure. You know?
Well, it's not that far from announcing you want to run away with
pretty
the circus because that's where the strong. I mean, you know, at least in this country, a lot of the strongmen you might see are traveling around with the circus. Right?
Exactly.
I think also one of the things that Chris realizes throughout the process and like in the film is that just because you don't have approval from your parents or acceptance or support in a certain thing doesn't mean that you can't find it somewhere else, you know, and he's able to find that within this group of men.
Yeah, I remember that came up. I think I asked it at the screening that I was at Tribeca Film Festival, and that's where I saw Benning Steel. I asked you from the audience, and in the Q&A, I asked, have your parents seen the film? And you said they had not seen the documentary yet.
No, they have not.
And they still have to date. They still have not.
As of this date, they have not seen the documentary.
I'm saying right here now, I will drive to their home and take them to Coney Island if that's what it takes.
I don't think there's much interest in it.
Okay.
It's just, and trying to foist it or create it is a point of
further,
creates a little bit of friction. I feel it's not. It immediately necessary.
Right.
If it does come, I'll take it. Right. But
you want them to come because they want to come, not because somebody's dragging.
It wasn't for lack of effort. That
okay? Because people would probably love to see them at come to a screening. People would probably think, oh, that's so great, you know, and then that the film that you guys could even have contributed somehow to that because I think they would still be blown away by this film. So hopefully they'll get to see it. Yeah.
Now, at this point, I've got a pretty neutral feeling.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not interested in it, I'm not gonna push it.
Yeah. No, I hear it. That's good. That's a healthy attitude.
You know, that scene in the film was essentially his kind of last. I mean, this is what I got from it.
At least, go ahead, Ron.
Was mm-hmm. his last attempt to try to make them interested. And there's only so far you can go with someone with people. Before you just, it becomes too much of an effort and it's
sure.
not worth it anymore.
Right. And if I can ask, and you certainly don't feel compelled that to answer if you don't want to, and it's, how did you reconcile that mind frame that you're describing?
Honestly, in looking back on it, I would probably have been very shocked had they expressed interest in something unconventional like this.
Okay.
And there's a part of me that believes if they all of a sudden express interest in it, it might be a little bit artificial. And they're certainly not artificial people.
No.
When you're right, you're right. When you're wrong, they'll tell you so.
So and that's an admirable trait.
They'll
right?
tell
and
you so.
That's a good
so.
Trait.
It's a sincere trait. It's maybe not necessarily, they're not very touchy-feely.
Right.
But I can usually count on an honest answer.
Right.
Solid advice. Sometimes it's unsolicited, but nonetheless.
Yeah. So, in other words, they don't have a soft touch.
For most things, no.
Okay. Well, how have you found the experience? How many, for instance, how many screenings have you gone to? We'll just say we know of that it's been at Hot Docs, right? And
yeah.
it's been at Tribeca. Is that kind
sure.
of it at this point?
It was at Tribeca and Hot Docs, and then mm-hmm. We went to Lighthouse International Film Festival just two weeks ago.
Yeah.
Where is that?
In Jersey.
It's in Jersey.
It was
in
Long Beach Island in the Jersey Shore.
Oh, nice. How was that?
It was great.
It was great, yeah.
You know, beach community.
It was a lot of fun. We
yeah.
had a they
Sounds
put
like
us
it.
Up in a yeah. cute little house. So we were
very
right on the water, the ocean side.
Nice.
It was nice.
And the film always gets a great reception. I mean, people really come up to us kind of tears in their eye and, you know, say some really incredible things.
Well, that's what I was going to, that's what I was asking because I was going to ask you next is how has that experience been for all of you? You can all answer that.
Incidentally, I looked on my website and I probably produced 40 hits. It was off the chart.
What are you saying? I don't understand what you just said. So whose website first? Do you have a personal one?
I have a website.
Okay.
And
what is it? So people can.
It's ChrisWondershek.com. Isn't that correct? Or is it not correct? You tell me.
ChrisWondershek.com.
There you go.
Okay. And we should just say right now, since you just said the word wonder, the reason that that's part of the name of the website, is because, as you'll find out when you see the film, is that Chris is given a nickname or a moniker, like a performance name.
Performance name is better.
By a, I guess, a
grandmaster,
mentor,
Dennis Rogers, who's not only a mentor to myself, but to many of the other people, and is in the direct Coney Island lineage.
Gotcha. Of the strongman.
Yeah, lineage.
And strongman performances. And so he's given the name Wonder, right?
Yes.
Chris Wondershek. You can go to chriswondershek.com. And then you got a large number of visits or hits or whatever. Is that what you're saying on the website?
Yes, I'm just remarking that I received a lot of responses.
There was a good deal.
A good deal of interest generated.
Gotcha.
After that particular showing on the Jersey Shore.
Oh,
yeah. So okay. There was a correlation between that.
Interesting.
That.
Well, everybody, Trebek was, that was so amazing. And then they just go on to the movie about white wine and
exactly.
Oh my God, white wine.
Yeah, right.
They've moved on. To some degree, it's kind of true. Well, in New York, we get a little bit easily jaded or distracted easily. You know, maybe I think that's not such a unique phenomenon. But
how do you hold
on to your audience? You know,
the reaction after screenings has been really great for Dave and I think, because
yes.
Making this film is making an independent film with just a couple of people is not the easiest thing in the world, and it can be very stressful and take a lot out of you. So to have people come up after screenings and express how the film has, you know, changed their perspective on mm-hmm. obstacles that they face, and it's inspired them to, you know, to challenge those things and to grow as people, is really rewarding.
That crazy stuff, like people saying they're going to go back to school and get their doctorate. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like all kinds of people with tears in their eyes, just saying like they really, there's something that they connected with in Chris's struggle and journey.
Those feelings that you receive,
yes,
in the Q&A sessions are often reflected in emails that I get. I get a surprising number of emails.
That's
people
surprising.
That are very supportive and interested in different parts of my life, and I save them, and it's nice to have people go out of their way to, you know, write a lengthy email explaining how valuable they thought the film was and how it could be an inspiration to other people who were sort of stuck in a rut.
Yeah, I think people, you know,
it's terrific.
It's people can relate to Chris's story across the board with all different things they can apply to their own life, because it's, you know, the inspirational nature.
It's not just
nature.
Performance. It's not just getting in front of people. But I mean, it's any kind of obstacle and trying to overcome it.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you know what I just tuned into. So I obviously related to that part of your story, the parents part. You know, the approval thing is often.
It's okay, Adam. It'll be all right.
Have you ever failed in front of a group of people?
No.
I've got one of my students with me. Let's hear it for Chris.
Come on, Chris.
I see a fence. I wonder if I'll be able to bend one of the bars. I see gorillas in a cage. I wonder if I could bend it. I see handcuffs. I wonder if I could break them.
Got me all excited. We gotta see something.
Unbelievable. It's bent. It's done.
You gotta see it to believe it, folks.
If a weight was on something that you love more than anything, how much strength could you develop in that life and death situation to lift that object? It's incredible. The limiting factor is the mind.
And there's a lot of angry mothers too. I get a lot of angry mothers mm-hmm. like come up to us and go, you know, have they really not seen the film?
Yeah.
Very, you know, just.
I've gotten some of that feedback too. And you know, frequently my parents are from clearly old school, much older than me.
But also not to defend anyone, but just to be as honest as possible. Like the stuff that you see in the film is not stuff that his parents are aware of. You're seeing Chris like by himself in his element, you know, doing things that are extremely personal, and
they have no
him.
Context,
and they don't see that.
Yeah.
They just see like anyone else would see. a guy there doing something, like bent twisting a horseshoe. Mm-hmm. But it goes far beyond that. It's like a mental kind of mental gymnastics every day to kind of do this stuff.
Yeah.
And not just with, oh, this is tough, I want to quit, but like everything that that's come up to that point goes into that. And, you know, to look at his parents and go, hey, well, you know, look how unsupportive they are. Well, they don't exactly understand what's going on. I think it's very possible. And one of the messages in the film that we, you know, worked hard to kind of create is this idea that, you know, it's possible to be very near to someone physically, but not mentally.
Emotionally.
To understand each other or emotional at all.
Right.
And that's one of the major kind of...
I think that was very accurately portrayed in the film because clearly my parents and I are... we may all respect each other, but we are nonetheless three entirely different people. And we have our own set of interests. And trying to foist my interests, whatever they may be, on one
you
of
can't.
Them is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And having them try and foist their interests on me is ridiculous.
Sure.
And between my parents, they each have things that they're involved in, and my father enjoys certain things that my mother would absolutely loathes. And my mother's involved in things that my father would never even consider tinkering with.
Sure.
But I suppose that may have helped keep us together as a group. We all have our intimate moments, but on the other hand, we all go our own separate ways. You know, we tend to do our own things.
Were you an only child?
I'm an only child.
It felt like that, but I wasn't certain about that. I want to just ask you guys also one more question, and I ask this a lot of documentary filmmakers, and the good reviews are wonderful and crucial, and the audience response is, of course, wonderful, as it seems like it has been your experience in so far. But I don't think, from what I always hear, there's nothing quite like when the subject endorses the film, your subject that you made this film about them and you show it to them the first time. Can you just describe the experience, and you can all kind of chime in on this, what that experience of when you finish the film, you're going to show it to Chris the first time. Paint a picture for me about what that was like.
Yeah, I actually, we wanted to show Chris the film before other people, obviously, because, you know, if someone comes up to him, you know, he has to know what's in the film. And it wasn't for approval. We made the film. He trusted us. It wasn't about, like, getting approval from him to do it.
Sure.
But we wanted him to see it. And I sat down with him, and it was in my apartment. And we watched it. And I was just watching him, because at that point,
sure,
I was so sick of the film that I was just kind of watching his reaction. And it was just I think he was processing it. You know, I mean, it must be weird to have a film made about you,
mm-hmm,
especially one so intimate. And I think, you know, from time to time, you would just turn to me and go, that looks like a great horseshoe. Isn't that a great horseshoe? Like all the emotional.
It's hard to grasp. It's really,
it's hard to believe. Someone else, right?
Yeah, the first time I watched the film, I looked up and said, you know, that guy looks very close to me. It's sunk in, and then you walk around, you're sort of elevated feeling. And as I said once before, now I watch the film maybe twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
But
what?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I like it each time. I mean, I don't. It doesn't get dry or stale with me. No.
Which is than I think Dave and I can say. So we did our job.
Yeah, and just particularly the editors too. I mean,
it's much more pleasurable to watch than it was to make.
It really makes me feel good. I get a very good feeling, a very powerful sense of self-worth that people would just stick 2 years of their lives out on the line and make an invest and say, listen, we believe there's something compelling in you, and we're going to put everything on the line because we believe in you. And it gives you a real great sense of self-worth. I don't know how else you would get that sort of feeling. I mean, it's tremendous. A lot of people just put their lives on hold because they believed in me and this project, and then it would materialize.
I think that also that helped Chris, you know, open up to us, you know, because he was somewhat of a shy person at the beginning. Seeing that we had, you know, this interest in him and
people
what he was doing,
cared.
yeah, for the first time, you know, and he, you know, that probably made him a lot more comfortable to open up.
And it was all it was all talking about in the beginning, like the physicality of what he was doing. You know, obviously we weren't hitting him with hard hitting questions right from the bat.
No.
You know, what's your relationship like with your parents? Go.
Also, generally,
like I did.
I was most of the picture was done in an environment that was, you know, captive, or certainly an environment that I was very comfortable in. You know, downstairs, or my apartment downstairs, or maybe with the other fellow strongmen. So you went into a comfortable environment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that helped. And we developed trust, and it was a very sort of gradual thing that they worked on developing, to the point where, you know, we would do a little socializing together, and a friendship grew, and it was done incrementally.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sort of... And
he's changed dramatically. I mean, the person now sitting here is very different from the old person. I mean, when I first met him, you know, he wouldn't look you in the eye. You know, like, I mean, you know, darting, his eyes would dart around.
You were uncomfortable with eye contact, among other things.
I feel like an entirely different person.
That was wonderful.
Before,
for the better, I assume.
Yes, there was before, and then there was after. And it was almost binary. It was like a switch that went on and went off. So for me, it was a bit of a miracle.
That's terrific. The film Bending Steel again will be having a screening Monday, July 8th. It's going to be at the beach, around the beach at Coney Island. There is a street address, though, if you need to GPS this: 3059 West 12th Street, Brooklyn, New York. Where you can get to by the D, the F. I'm specific. We're going to get people there.
Oh, we're going to get people there.
Oh, it's going to be an amazing
event. You can also go to the rooftop films website.
That's
well,
where I'm at, reading right now.
To get people there, you might want to tell them that it's free as well.
Yeah,
it's a free event, so you can go on to their website and don't purchase tickets, which is the opposite of what I used to say.
How great is that?
take the D, the F, the N, the Q. You can drive down Ocean Parkway, which is on one way. Don't take the belt, I always say, but I'm giving directions. You don't need GPS. You've got it all right here. It's a full-service podcast here. My guests today have been producer Ryan Scafuro, director Dave Carroll, and strongman Chris Scheck. I appreciate you all coming by, and this is great. This was terrific.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Adam.
Honey, won't you please sing another song? Honey, won't you please be gone? Your sentimental shake that rattles through my bones. Honey, won't you? Honey, please move your honey on. Mama, won't you take another turn? Mama, when you go home, trouble comes to everyone who dares to be amused.
This is Greta Gerwig of Francis Ha, and you're listening to Film Wax Radio.
Great. That was a lot of fun. I have to say, just when we were chatting, as you can tell, Chris is a bit serious, but he did loosen up, didn't he? He's terrific. I really enjoyed meeting him. And there is, I put it on the Facebook page, I believe on FilmWax Radio's Facebook page, but which is facebook.com/FilmWaxRadio. You can go and see Chris bends a steel horseshoe into a heart-shaped object. You can see him do it. He gave that to one of the women in the rooftop film's office, not to me. Anyway, that's Bending Steel. Next up is Nathan Silver and his mom, Cindy. And also you'll hear my friend and producer of FilmWax Radio. She's been editing the show and helping with all sorts of FilmWax Radio stuff. And it's Betty Kaplan, the adorable, lovely woman she is. And so if you hear her chiming in, that's because... she was there when we did the show. And so we'll see you right after that.
Um,
I am going to do an introduction of sorts here. I'm going to wing it a little bit because I do have your... You're here. Because of the casual nature, the informal nature of this show, you're allowed to chime in and correct me or put in your own two cents, whatever. Welcome to Film Wax Radio. Nathan Silver graduated from NYU's Tisch School of the Arts in 2005, and since then he has written, directed, and produced four shorts and three feature films. His films have played in festivals all around the world, including Edinburgh, Vienna, Slam Dance, Sarasota, Woodstock, Toronto, and the BAFICI?
Bafisi in Buenos Aires.
Oh, okay.
I'm about to head
and
there.
And Bafisi. You are?
Yeah.
We are?
Yeah,
oh,
we are.
Shit. I am not prepared yet. Okay. We are. Congratulations. With Soft in the Head?
With both films, actually.
With both.
Yeah, Exit Lane is in the international competition, and then Soft in the Head is playing Panorama there. So it's on the side.
Oh, okay. So you're not competing against yourself.
No.
In that case, because that would be interesting. Nathan's films have received praise from Filmmaker Magazine, The Hollywood Reporter, IndieWire, and FilmWax. He is currently in pre-production on his fourth feature, Gun Under My Pillow. It's obviously another comedy.
It is?
I bet. Yeah. Today we're joined by Ms. Cindy Silver, mother and grandmother, ESL teacher, and an avid reader. Okay. And we'll find out what she's...
What she's
currently reading.
Yeah, I know.
I'd love to talk books. Maybe you want to do that show, Cindy. Book
sure.
Wax Radio?
Sure.
Cindy never expected to fall into acting. But being the good mother that she is, she obliged Nathan...
Sigh.
Sigh implied. And... took the role of Cindy, a stretch, in Exit Elena, one of Nathan's two features. Although she never considered herself an actress per se, she is a natural. Her son foresees many future roles. So first question, is Cindy in Gun Under the Pillow?
Yeah. She's actually playing the one of the lead characters' mothers, the mother of the husband character.
Yeah. You have a Nathan. You have a. And lastly, I should just say, and then we'll come back to that. We're also joined by Betty Kaplan, who's here today.
Hello.
Hi, Betty. Betty is on board here with FilmWax Radio, mercifully. And so you have a very memorable role yourself in Exit Elena, as Elena's. As the son of Cindy.
Yes.
The mother, the daughter, actually, of
in-law.
Your husband's mother, right?
Yes, my mother-in-law is living with us. Elena is her caretaker, and Nathan is our son.
Who pops in about three-quarters of the way through the film.
Right.
Yeah.
But far worse than Nathan ever is in real life.
An exaggerated
disclaimer.
Form.
You've made your disclaimer.
Yes.
Does he have you say that?
No, I say it.
No. Throughout the whole filming, she kept asking me why I wanted to portray myself in such a bad light.
Do you get it now? Do you get what he's doing?
Yes, sort of, but it's still painful as the mother to watch a son act that way, even if it's in a movie.
Okay. That's honest.
I mean, because it reminds you of when I was younger, when I had, when I was an anxious.
Issues, when he had issues. And this shows them far worse than it was. So for me, it just, it brought up a lot of painful things.
Really?
Mother-in-law's brain-wasting disease.
In
the movie, it's a broken hip. So, yeah, it brought up a lot of real-life things, but, done fictionally.
Sure. And in between, let me ask you, Cindy, in between books... And seeing Nathan's...
And knitting and taking care of grandchildren, yes.
Sure. All that multitasking, do you have time to go to the movies? Or do you just get them on TV? And what movies would you choose normally?
Okay, so normally, my husband, when I met him, was going to be a filmmaker, and he went to a program at Harper College and left right before Nicholas Ray got there. So I've always been with a film lover, and so we always went to alternative films and loved Woody Allen and, John Cassavetes.
Eric Romare. You loved Eric Romare.
Yeah, we loved Eric Romare.
Okay, so essentially character-driven films, talk-driven films, dialogue-driven.
Yeah, I'll never go to an action movie. Mm-hmm. Never.
Okay.
You can't get me to one.
Okay, don't direct me because
never will.
They'll never say never. Sometimes I think it's good to sometimes work out of your.
Oh yeah, you know, I'd want to do a noir or some or like a genre piece, but I don't think it would be action.
Right. I just had on. There's two new films coming out, and I'm not going to spend much time on them. But there's one is at the new director's new film series called Towheads, made by Shannon Plum, and her husband is Derek Cianfrance, who you may have heard of, who made Blue Valentine a couple of years ago. Now is a new film called A Place Beyond the Pines. I saw it last night. I saw Towheads a while ago, a few days back, and I had them both on because they're married, and they're friends because our kids go to school. Long story short is I asked them to describe their films, and Derek came up with a good idea. He described her film. She did an awful job of describing his film, yet she tried. What I'm going to ask you to do, Cindy, is describe both of Nathan's films, but, you know.
Sure. Okay, so in my eyes, Nathan takes scenes from his very colorful life, because we have a family with many layers of, you know, crazy and interesting and, you know, illnesses and problems and good things, bad things. And he has made two movies that to me are extremely moving. When I sat at the Woodstock Film Festival with people my age, because it was about a mother-in-law and a son and fighting with a husband, everybody said to me, it's like Larry Davis, it makes you cringe, but you can't take your eyes away.
Right.
So to me, Nathan catches the essence of life, the bittersweetness, the relationships that people have, the complications of trying to be a son, you know, all the things that go with being a son, all the things that go with being a husband, a wife, a mother-in-law, a mother, that life is just so full of so many things that you're trying to balance a life, but he brings so much feeling and almost like Charlie Chaplin, the waif in his movie, Elena is like that girl in his waifs. And so he catches a side of life I don't often see in movies, and it really touches something, like whether he were my son or not.
Yes.
I find his movies so moving.
It sounds like you feel privileged that he's made these films for you.
Well, I feel privileged that I had him, because he's taken me through poetry and art and playwriting and then film writing and filmmaking, and I've called him Van Gogh with a mother. Because he's so brilliant, I think. Both my sons are brilliant. One in music, the other in every other art form. And I feel like I never went to a museum correctly till I went with Nathan through a museum. I never understood poetry till he started writing French poetry in fifth grade. He's just brought me down roads. He learned French so well that his French tutor said, you know more words than I do. He's an unbelievable kid. He brought me to Europe. So he's expanded my life so much.
Wow.
And yet he's a lot of work.
Wow. You don't really need a publicist, Nathan.
Yeah, I was going to say, no wonder you brought your mom on.
I was told I had to be here.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming. And
I'm thrilled to do anything for Nathan. I call him Mr. Director.
You love your son, but I hate the director.
I love my son, but I hate the director.
As a director?
Brutal.
Yeah?
It's 18-hour days in the summer with the windows taped shut.
But you had your trailer to recuse yourself to, right? And to, you know, you could shut the door and just go to your trailer and have your headspace.
No, I had my house where I got up at 5 to do all the catering, serving, putting the staff up,
so
and then acting.
No.
I put in 18 miles a day on my pedometer.
My goodness. So I'll do a little bit. I'll get things started as far as the synopses, because let people know a little bit about what these films. I'll start. You just interrupt when I miss.
Sure, absolutely.
Speak, because it's inevitable.
No, I'd rather.
But,
I mean.
Yeah. But let's talk about also Soft in the Head, which your mom is not in, unless I'm mistaken.
Well,
She has a brief cameo
in a
restaurant.
It's
a big stretch, me complaining in a restaurant. It embodies my mother and me and every one of my relatives.
And mine. It's like, that's why at a certain point I said to my parents after like countless Mother's Day and Father's Day brunches, I said, we're just not doing it. I'm not going to the restaurant anymore. We'll do it at home, because it's just, I can't do it. I just can't sit at a table and listen to you complain about the service on the busiest morning brunch day of the year.
That's so funny.
But But they're great. I'm sure. And if I had them on, they would be interrupting you to talk about me and all I've taught them. And but as parents should. So Soft in the Head, and my friend Theo is in that, which is what put you in, on my radar in the first place.
Yeah.
Theodore Baloukas. Soft in the Head is essentially about you. So Carl Krantz plays. Yeah, I don't know.
A character
why. I just merged
Nathan.
The two
well,
for some reason.
The character's based, name is Nathan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he's based on you.
To a degree.
To a degree, anyway, yes. A fictionalized version. And this young guy has a crush. He's from a religious Jewish family. He has a crush on his sister's friend, who is a bit of a waif, but also a drifter type. And she comes over to their house, and he's like, you know, just becomes a bit obsessed with her.
Yeah.
Anyway, she, in the meantime, she gets thrown out of there by her girlfriend, the brother, the sister, and she ends up staying in this...
like a men's shelter.
A men's shelter who in a guy's apartment yeah. in the village, I assume, East Village or Lower East Side or something. Where is it?
I mean,
where
it's
was it?
Not,
Brooklyn?
It's
Greenpoint?
Never, it's in Brooklyn.
It is
we
Brooklyn.
Shot in Brooklyn, yeah.
It was not
Heights.
Identified. Anyway, yeah. It doesn't really matter. So, and among those men that are sort of transient
yeah.
Are a bunch of characters. And just as a reference point, that if you imagine One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which I can't believe was not some sort of inspiration at some point in your life, but... as you know, so many filmmakers, but if you think about all the cast of miscreants
yeah.
that are in at the Cuckoo's Nest, these guys kind of are, it's sort of like that type of
absolutely,
you know, yes, 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 Jack, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And you
sorry.
Have, and then there's a guy who runs the men's shelter, Maury, who played by Ed Ryan, who tried, and he tries to save all the people he brings into his shelter, but obviously. You know, his help can only go so far.
Yeah.
So.
And it does only go so far.
It don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, in Exit Elena, my husband is convinced that Nathan is just like Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So, the power putting the two together.
Well, there is a mental illness, right? There's always this kind of anxiety and tension that goes on in the film, both films.
Yeah.
Where people are grappling, I'm not saying they're mentally ill, but I'm
yeah.
saying they are grappling with mental health.
Well, I never, you know,
right?
And
that's what might be disturbing to you, Mom, because
I mean,
well, I gave him my anxieties.
Yeah, I mean, I've
well, you're a parent. What else do you?
I feel like I mean, I started having anxiety attacks when I was around 15, and yeah, I very rarely feel comfortable in my skin, and I want to make the viewer feel that way. I want to make them feel uncomfortable, but in a way that's engaging.
Sure.
So it's not just like, you know, it's not like an Austrian assault or some sort of like European, like, we're just going to make you feel uncomfortable. I want it to come from something that's a bit more sneaky and not necessarily that expected route of like, because I don't like that art house discomfort. I don't know. There's something that really rubs me the wrong way about like Michael Haneke's movies and all that.
Yeah.
But may I point out, Nathan is much more comfortable in his skin these last few years. He's really come into his own,
mm-hmm.
which is very heartwarming for his mother, me.
I'm just putting it all into my movies now.
Well, I think also we take security in our, on some level, in our idiosyncrasies to some degree, because they kind of end up defining us to some degree. It's like to let go of all that is like...
Yeah, I mean, it's part of my personality and my makeup.
Right.
I mean, it happened when I was in adolescence, so that's like
we
how
always
I formed.
Back.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know if I did much justice to the synopsis of Soft in the Head, but it's... You know, so it's sort of a few days in the course of
following this girl. I mean,
right.
mostly it's about the drifter played by Chayla Chavarria, and yeah, it's about following her as she gets thrown out of her boyfriend's apartment in the first scene, and then she just ends up in a men's shelter, and everyone around her is trying to save her, but
yeah.
to no avail.
Right. One of the things I really liked about it was that even though there were a couple of guys that obviously were their libido was slightly peaked. There was essentially always this feeling of wanting to help her and take care of her by
yeah.
Everybody there. You know, which was nice.
Yeah.
It was unconventional in that way, you know, and therefore.
She does bring that out in people in real life. I was clothing her and giving her money for cabs when I met her because she's very beautiful. And I was concerned
yeah.
how she was dressed in the big city.
Oh, I see. Sure.
So that's soft in the head. Exit Elena, which I did I describe that a little bit before? I
think about yeah, the, you described the visiting, it a little bit, yeah.
Right, a young, another young woman.
Yep.
Elena, yep. Played by...
Kia Davis. Kia Davis?
Kia Davis.
Yep.
She is a recently certified nurse.
Yep. A live-in aide.
Live-in aide, excuse me, a live-in aide, whose assignment by the alignment of planets and otherwise is in the home of Cindy and her husband and... in the burbs. Is that a Boston suburb? Because yep. I know you're living
Lexington,
in Boston.
Lexington,
it's Lexington.
Yeah.
I remember Lexington quite well. And I had family on right on Mass Ave, actually.
Oh, wow.
But it's another podcast. And so she goes there, and she's living there. She's also very uncomfortable, and the mother is a handful.
Insufferable.
yeah. I mean, also mm-hmm. a great friend.
I mean, the
comes on strong, very strong.
Yeah.
Right? What do you think, Benny?
Well, it seems like she needed a friend more than she needed a live-in aide in the house. She's the one who's lonely, and she's the one who needs a human connection.
Right.
So that, hence the insufferable part of her.
Well, I tend to take on a lot of people in my life. I tend to need to give a lot, but probably I get a lot back.
What gets lost in that, though, in the constant giving?
Yeah, what gets lost is I just get exhausted because I do give a lot. But I get so much, like the children in the movie and their mother were in my life for years and gave me immeasurable love and comfort. So I do get a lot from giving because I get a lot back.
Right.
So both of the movies were unscripted?
Yeah, well, they were outlined. So all of, in Exit Elena, every action was outlined, but the dialogue was all unscripted. And then in Soft in the Head, we had an outline, but 3 days into the shoot, actually because of Theo, did this unexpected thing. He walked out. We were shooting a scene in the dining room area, and then he walked out and brought a character back in who had supposed to have exited. And we just let the camera, we had like roll. Three cameras rolling, and we just let them go. And after that, we were able to cut out like a whole chunk of the story. And then we completely rewrote the outline as we went. And basically it was mostly unscripted. I just took it as far as it could go in terms of just going with what was happening.
Right, I understand. So you're open to those moments, those spontaneous moments that just sort of...
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, we talk about anxieties and we talk about making the viewer feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it seems like you really need to put the actors at ease in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Since you know how you put a camera, you point a camera on a regular person, they're going to freak out and not act normally.
Yeah.
So how do you go about that? While the subject matter is anxieties and mental disorders, but at the same time, they need to be at ease.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting question. I think that I spend months developing the characters with the actors, and then I usually choose people who I know are right for the role, mm-hmm. whether it's because... you know, the role somehow reflects some aspect of them, or it's just evident that it's in them. I mean, there's just something about them. And so I spend a lot of time developing the characters, and I think that's why they're, you know, and when you have cameras, like, just constantly rolling and you shoot a lot of footage, it helps. Because they're not just like, it's not like, all right, we got to get this dolly shot now, everyone, you know, and, like, it's all about the choreography. No, it's not about that. It's about capturing behavior. And so if you just allow people to behave...
That leads to my next question. I would be terrified to film on film stock. Since
I wish I could. Yeah.
That's exactly so. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Well, they're both on. Right. So, Exit Elena was on actually mini DV.
All right. Okay.
And then Soft in the Head was shot on 7Ds. So it was HD.
Okay.
But we really messed around with it. We really messed around with it in post.
I'm sorry. I felt like I read somewhere that.
We were going to shoot on 16, but then when we realized, mm-hmm. When we were like a few weeks away from the shoot, we didn't have the budget for it.
Well, that'd be too expensive. Yeah.
Well, it does bring up that point that filmmakers, for better or for worse now, can be scriptless because it's cheaper. It's so cheap you can. But and also, I heard you say just a few minutes ago you had three cameras, which I thought was a bit surprising, and also. If you think about that and shooting on film, it's
that would have been insanely expensive.
I was going to wonder how you even shot with three cameras at all. Like even you know, a lot of, I'd say, filmmakers with track records and, you know, emerging have use sometimes just one camera even.
Yeah, well, I mean, we it
takes a long time.
It's we just I mean we just had for because we knew that we were we just needed to get these we knew that we couldn't get these things to we couldn't repeat these certain moments, yeah. So we just had to capture them. So we had to have cameras all over the place. Now this was, of course, this was unfortunate for sound because we didn't have everyone mic'd. So we'd be on, we'd have a great shot of someone doing something insane, and then we couldn't use it because we didn't have
the sound. Audio.
Yeah. So for the next one I'm doing, I mean, it's going to be a lot more structured. The outline is much longer. The outlines for Soft and Head and Exilane were both 10 pages long. The next one is 45 pages long.
Okay.
So it's a lot. It's a lot more detailed in that way, and it's going to be. I mean, there are some scenes that are going to be more chaotic, but I think for the most part, we're going to. I mean, we're shot listing at this time. We're going about it in a more traditional way.
Mm-hmm. That seems more work than writing a script.
To do it without
to write an outline of 40 pages.
Yeah, there's. It's just a lot of detail and just getting at what the story's about. Yeah. It's been good though. It's based on my friend's life. He's playing himself, and then we've cast an actress as his wife. I mean, it's really taken it's shifted into something. It's its own story now, but that's where it began. And I'm really it's like a romantic comedy, but a perversion of a romantic comedy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we're turning everything.
If I could just speak to how he makes people comfortable on the set. When we started off at the beginning of the movie, Nathan, like, said, you get up at this point, you get down, you walk here, you walk there, you say this. And then we just, like, I, you know, can't remember things now at this point in my life. So I did all the wrong. He said, Mom, forget about that. Just do what feels comfortable. And then it evolved into very comfortably fighting with this other husband, even worse than I fight with my husband, and everything fell into place. Nathan has a way of doing that, which astounds me. But I'm not a professional actress, and yet he had everybody acting like my 90-year-old neighbor, who's has a beautiful part in Exit Elena, and he just gets roles out of people that no one knew they had in them. But we all feel very comfortable.
Yeah. We're talking with filmmaker Nathan Silver and his mother, and
she has a lot more parts
Cindy.
Coming up.
Cindy, oh, very good.
I was only like in 10 seconds in all his shorts, so I didn't expect this.
Well, Cindy Silver, emerging actress, you're about to go to Italy? Is that what you said?
No, I'm going to Argentina.
Argentina, I'm sorry.
We're going to Sarasota.
Okay.
And then for 2 days, and then flying from there to Argentina, and then I get back and I hit the ground running with pre-production because we start shooting in May.
Sarasota Film Festival?
Yeah.
I thought that just happened. Why am I...
No. I mean, I think it begins April 5th, but I don't go there until the 10th. Yeah.
All right. And you had a screening of Soft in the... which one did you do with the Hammer to Nail?
Oh, that was Exit Elena.
Yeah. Right? You, with and Brandon. And,
yep.
And, okay. He was on... Brandon Harris was on it a few weeks
ago.
Oh,
cool, yeah.
And he's been on a few times.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, he's a good friend. And you're in what stage now? When do you plan to go into production? On
May 16th.
May 16th.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to finish, like, in June?
Yeah, we're shooting until June 3rd, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Should everything go as planned.
Yes.
And that's crossed. And you're shooting in New York?
In New York City and then upstate New York.
Oh, very good. Okay. Yeah. All right. Very good. So let's get to the heart of the matter here. What is what are you reading, and what can you recommend to me? Because you really are an avid.
Well, I used to read a book a day.
Is that true?
It is true. For many, many, many years, I stayed up till. Well, my mom is 97, and she reads usually 3 books at a time, and she actually remembers the authors and what she's reading. She's much more up on all the books than I am at this point.
So your mom is 97.
97.
And she's
in a
her
book
eyesight
club,
is good.
In Long Island in her senior living that I brought her to, and she reads every new book that comes out.
Really?
I tend to love old classics, so I'm always rereading the Brontes, and Jane Eyre, and I just love, like, symbolism, and so I teach English as second language. So with my students, I've just been rereading To Kill a Mockingbird, which is one of my favorites.
Mine too.
And I just did Animal Farm. So for fun, I read murder mysteries. But for serious reading, I just keep going back and taking out classic books.
You know, I want to mention, because you probably loved Wuthering Heights.
I did, I guess.
Thanks. I would recommend, just as a, since you've read it, there's a version of that film version that came out recently by Andrea Arnold, who's a British
Right. And filmmaker. You recommend it?
Oh, it's terrific. Yeah.
Okay.
It's on oscilloscope, but it's worth seeing. I don't know
great,
if you can
great.
Stream it, but you can definitely get it, you know, online.
Right. I had started a book group where I lived, which went, it's still going, but I had some eye issues, so I couldn't read for a couple of years.
Oh my God, that must have been
It was
horrific for you. What did you turn to audio? Thank God there's that.
No,
right?
I like reading for me is silent. So I did a lot of knitting because I was able to do that. And so in that book group, initially it started with the poetry mentor of Nathan, who was my neighbor. So she's a professor of English. So we did Faulkner, we did Alice Munro, we did all these fabulous, fabulous books.
Yeah.
And I live for books, and I inspire all my students to read all the time.
Yeah. Some of those are my favorite. I mean, you mentioned some of my favorites also. I was also... you know, very, very, I think To Kill a Mockingbird was the first book I read as a young adult that I got choked. I think I cried at the end.
Right.
Like, I really felt bad about that it was over.
I just wanted
it to go on forever.
What's so wonderful about you saying that is Cody Stokes, who edited.
He edited Exit Alien and then was a DP and editor on Soft in the Head and also one of the writers.
And he just named his brand new baby Harper. So we've been emailing each other about Harper Lee. We're both fascinated by her life and the one book. And I think that's the perfect book.
Is she still alive?
There's a new book out on her, and I've just been reading up on it. I can't remember. She may still be alive or just recently died. Her sister's giving a lot of information. And Cody and I both agree that it was the perfect book. She didn't need to write another, but she did try for like 30 years and then stopped.
Yeah, and she was ostensibly a friend of Truman Capote's, right?
Yeah.
Well, she really did write a lot of In Cold Blood.
Oh.
Yeah,
I didn't
and his
realize.
Other things.
Okay, wow.
But I like anyone who likes To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, yes. And... you know, and it's interesting because I really laid back on my reading, and I was an avid reader. I didn't read a book a day, but I read like, you know, a book a week probably for years, and I just, since this whole thing with what I'm trying to do, I just have really cut back quite a bit.
Right.
It's something I miss. I don't know where to start even.
Right. Well, I lived in a bedroom with two brothers, so I would put my blanket up on the shelf and have my surreptitiously turn my light on, and that was my only quiet time because I was in a room with soldiers and guns all day. So I would read all like till 2 or 3 every night.
So did you want an author among your children? Did you want an author?
Oh, did I want an author? No, because I love music as much. You know, I lived in the village and went to every concert from the time I was a young
girl.
Who'd you
see?
Who'd I see? Everyone. Jim Morrison. Expose
Never
himself.
Heard of him.
The Doors.
Oh, I've heard of his penis, but I didn't know there was a net guy.
And I looked for Bob Dylan. I loved him since I was 12, and Joan Baez, and every band. It's I saw everyone.
Everybody.
I love everyone who was at the Fillmore East.
The Fillmore East. And
Jimi Hendrix. I saw everybody. And so my older son was a musician in a band, and I spent all night in clubs with him at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Did you go to, did you get any of those posters? No, because they were just in front.
My husband has some of the posters.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Those were pretty iconic.
Yeah. And we also, we have some of my husband's a photographer, and actually his pictures of a lot of... Uh-huh. The rock stars are all over the world in books and CDs. Yeah, so I went along with him at Queen's College. Everyone who came in, Janis Joplin, he was the photographer, so I got to see everybody
Amazing.
Come through.
Lucky.
Yeah, we were lucky. So I got the music.
Yeah.
I didn't get an author, but he's a writer. Nathan wrote beautiful poetry.
Sure,
So I did get an author.
It's lovely. It's a great story. The two of you have a great chemistry, and I see why you're collaborating.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a nice thing. And so, again, it's the filmmaker is Nathan Silver. And the two films that have recently come out are Soft in the Head and Exit Elena. It's not, you can't see them really yet, can you?
No, I believe that we're going to have a week-long run of Exit Elena in July in New York.
Okay.
But I don't know beyond that. Soft in the Head is just starting its festival run. It's going to premiere in 2 weeks.
Okay, but yeah, but eventually they'll get, I'm sure somebody will just, they'll be distributed by, we'll work that out. We'll work it out. You know,
We'll project it on buildings.
No, we'll do it. We'll get.
And if I'm also allowed to add one interesting fact.
Of course you are.
Going to the Woodstock Film Festival with Nathan changed my life. My husband and I are moving to the area. I fell in love with Rhinebeck, where his movie played, and we just bought a house.
We own it.
We just sold our house in Lexington.
Oh.
Well, I wasn't in New York. I was in Massachusetts.
It's a suburb of Boston, and moon, like about 100 miles north of the city.
Yeah.
I went to school there. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And they have a beautiful festival. Film theater in Rhinebeck.
Yeah. No, it's a very artsy community, and Woodstock, of course, is great, and all those native towns on the Hudson Valley.
Yeah. We're going to be shooting in our new house.
Wow. So really what you bought is a set.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm doing it during his shoot, so the movie will be in a new location.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll look for more things from Nathan shortly.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Next week, we're going to have the team behind the film Newlyweeds. I didn't mispronounce that. That's how you say it, Newlyweeds. It had a very successful screening at BAM Cinema Fest last week and will be at Rooftop Films coming up in about a week or so. Newlyweeds, filmmaker Shaka King, actress Trey Harris, and Tone Tank. These guys are not, those two guys, I don't believe are professional actors. I could be wrong about Trey. I apologize if I got that wrong. Tone is a friend of the filmmaker, but he's right on the money. He's a great natural actor. And it's a very funny film and with moments of seriousness, but it's primarily a comedy. And you'll want to see Newlyweeds. And so they're coming up next week, as is John Anderson, film journalist, writes for the New York Times and Variety. And do I have anybody else coming on? I'm not sure. Oh, yes. And also we have on the, this is scheduled and it should happen. I haven't done the show yet, so I always kind of have to give a slight caveat. The filmmaker Ryan Coogler behind Fruitvale Station will be on. And also we're planning to have on the lead actress from the film, Melanie Diaz. And Fruitvale Station, pretty intense film, but really well made. So all those, that's going to be a big show. Next week, episode 149. I just want to mention, I took Jacob, my son, to see Man of Steel last week. I just put him on a plane to go to visit his cousins in Nashville. But right beforehand, I said, let's go check out Man of Steel, because he'd been wanting to see it. And this is my sort of mini review of a film that not normally on the FilmWax Radio radar, right? Man of Steel, one of the major blockbusters this summer. And I can just tell you, the first half of it was pretty good, actually. I was really taken back. I guess I had heard positive things. And I want to say that the guy who plays him is terrific. He's got a real strong presence on screen. I thought, maybe you don't agree, that he was actually pretty charismatic. And the movie overall, and that guy, by the way, his name is Henry Cavill. I think the movie itself overall takes itself a little too seriously, but I thought Henry Cavill was still able to kind of rise above it and sort of seemed like keep things a little lighter than, let's say, than you might find in the Dark Knight series. Also very good was Amy Adams, and of course you've probably been reading and hearing about Michael Shannon, who has been lots of great indie films, all of Jeff Nichols' films, for example, but he's... he plays General Zod,
So anyway, I took Jacob to see this movie, and he afterwards I said, "So what do you think?" And he was like, "You know, it was okay." I think he said he was disappointed that Lex Luthor wasn't in it. He really wanted to see Lex Luthor, and I said, "Probably the next one." But he had to settle with General Zod, and I think we both related that this movie was just a little too serious for a 9-year-old, and I should have probably thought twice about bringing him, but he was interested in seeing it. He was very excited to see it, and we went to the William Berg Cinema, which I had not been to before, to see it. So it was my way of sort of meeting the Blockbuster halfway by going to, you know, Williamsburg to see it. We had a good time anyway, but he did prefer the Christopher Reeve version. I'm not kidding around. He actually said he had seen that and he preferred it. And who can blame him? You know, it's much more upbeat and funny. And of course, it has a deep nostalgic pull with me. But nevertheless, the first half of Man of Steel, I give a thumbs up. Then it gets all very blockbustery on you, and it just sort of goes into blowing up lots of skyscrapers and a prolonged, like, 45-minute battle or even maybe longer than that. And I just think it sort of loses any sense of lightness that it has. But the origin story part, which is the first half, is really good. And I even liked Russell Crowe as, you know, Superman's dad. So Kevin Costner, kind of a thankless role, but he did fine. That's it. That's my take on Man of Steel. You can see why I got out of the film criticism game. Listen, thank you very much. We'll be back next week with episode 149. This is Adam Shartoff. You've been listening to Film Wax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films and AT&T.